Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this international postgame show. The United States playing their friendly against Ukraine over at Cyprus because of the very hot and heavy political situation going on between Russia and the Ukraine, of course. Joining me for this 2-0 loss by the United States is Kartik Krishnan from World Soccer Talk. And Kartik, while there, you know, we really kind of lied about how this performance was. Obviously, it's to see which players from their European clubs are going to make this roster. We just have to say that we all have our hopes and prayers for everyone in the Ukraine, and hopefully the matter at hand can be resolved, and hopefully any form of bloodshed will end.
Yeah, I certainly hope that's the case, Daniel. I think a lot of this is in that's not in our hands. It's in the hands of Vladimir Putin. So let's hope he backs down.
Yeah, well, let's hope and see what happens. We'll get to some of that a little later in the show. Let's talk about this match. If you want to talk about the energy in this match, Kartik, once again, it's a tale of two halves. They looked very flat at the beginning in the first half. But then when the second half came around and Jurgen Klinsmann gave them, I don't know if you want to call it a pep talk or a swift kick in the rear, they looked a lot better in the second half, especially the substitutions that Klinsmann made. You just have to wonder and worry about if this is going to be a repeat of 2010, if they're going to have horrible first halves and they're going to have better second halves, will they have the energy to go a full 90? That's the question I think we have on our minds right now.
Yeah, I think what we saw today was a team that hadn't played a lot together. I think what we are looking at going forward, though, is individual performances from this game and who stood out and who put themselves in strong consideration to be on that 23-man squad that goes to Brazil this summer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think right now what we see on the back line, John Brooks is definitely not ready for prime time on the national team. Like Taylor Twellman said to me and to him, he's more of a prospect right now for maybe Russia. I don't think John Brooks is ready to go for the national team. And to be fair here, I don't even understand why he was even considered to be put into it, into this training match, or at least this friendly against Ukraine, when you probably could have gotten somebody else to play there unless there was no one available. But John Brooks right now, to me, doesn't look like he's ready for prime time.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be on the World Cup team, quite frankly. I think what you saw today with an inexperienced player that actually made the rest of the back line look poor. He was out of position a lot. He didn't read the game quickly. He made a number of mistakes, even chasing down plays. And I think he's a guy that is a long-term project, and he was a player that we were very excited about. Had some good moments at Hertha Berlin early in the Bundesliga season, but his club performances have tailed off as well, and I think he's a prospect for the future, but not for 2014.
No, absolutely not. And unfortunately, you know, I don't like talking about players that might be done not playing for the national team anymore, and unfortunately I think Aguchi Onyewu is that player. I mean, I've always enjoyed how he performs on the back line. Of course, we'll never forget what he did to Jerry Borghetti in the Columbus Crew Stadium in the qualifier to basically the old stare down. And, you know, he's great goals in the past, but obviously I don't like saying anything negative about players saying, well, I don't think they're going to be on the national team for anymore. And unfortunately, I think Aguchi Onyewu is done. I don't want to say it, but I have to say it. He looks to be done.
Yeah, he played really well at Sheffield Wednesday recently, and I thought that this was going to be an opportunity he would take. that he knew he had to get make a move to a club where he was actually going to play in the next 6 months. So he made the move to Sheffield Wednesday in January. They've been playing very well. They've escaped the drop zone in the championship, and that would put him in a position where he'd get called in for this March friendly. He did that. He played well at Sheffield United Wednesday, got injured, came back from injury, continued to play well, and now is in a position where he just needed a good game today to put himself back in the mix. He didn't have that. Now, to what extent was the pairing with John Brooks responsible for that? I'm not quite sure. Maybe that had a lot to do with the problems today.
Probably so, and it looked like there was like no communication on the field at all. And Jurgen Klinsmann comes out with the 4-2-3-1 setup, having Jozy Altidore once again as the lone striker. But the truth of the matter is, I've said this many times, I know Klinsmann wants to change things up. I know he wants to try and make it a little bit more attack-driven, to have a little more help in the midfield as possible, or at least having Clint Dempsey behind Altidore to give him a little more sustainable help. But, you know, once again, Cardick, the USA proves they're a 4-4-2. There's no doubt in my mind that the United States national team is better as a 4-4-2 formation than tinkering anything else. I mean, you can try 3-5-2 if you want. Maybe that might help a little bit better. But the truth is, they're not a 4-2-3-1. They are a flat-out 4-4-2.
Yeah, I think Klinsmann has it's tough. I mean, I think we're talking about personnel issues really stopping us from doing what we need to do to play the 4-2-3-1 properly. And that's I think, a preferred formation for Klinsmann. He wanted to get away from the 4-4-2. I think we know this. It's tough because I don't think – look, and this is why I'm pausing while we're talking about this. He has spent now – he's been in the job 2.5, almost 3 years. He took over after the World Cup in 2011. He has spent his entire time running this this program geared towards playing football a specific way. It hasn't just been geared towards results. Results are more important than anything. We know that. But it's been geared towards his style. And I think if you play 4-4-2 – you're backsliding stylistically in his mind and in the mind of what we tried to establish as the way we're trying to do things. So I think that this is going to be very very difficult for him to do, but he might have to, as you say.
I mean, that's what you saw with Aaron Johansson subbing in along with Breck Shea, because they pulled Castillo, they pulled Kleiston. They had Johansson up top with Altidore, and you could see that even though they had a better start in the second half, but you can see things were really clicking with guys being paired up, the current AZ Alkmaar striker and the former AZ Alkmaar striker being up top. I mean, I don't have a problem with seeing this kid getting an opportunity. I'll be honest with you. If you're talking about someone that's probably got off the bubble and onto the roster – for Brazil, it's Aaron Johansson, how he's developed over there in the Eredivisie with Alkmaar. He has been sensational. And I think, you know, once again, it's a coup that we got him to remove himself from the Icelandic national team for him to be with the U.S.
Yeah, I think he's developed nicely. You know, the irony about the whole thing with him is that his development has had a lot to do with Jozy Altidore moving to Sunderland, right? He's gotten more time at AZ, a featured striker for AZ, since Altidore moved to Sunderland, and he's developed nicely. Another player that he made a cameo today, but another player I know Jurgen Klinsmann's keeping an eye on is Juan Agudelo, who made his move to Stoke City, was then loaned into that same league, into the Eredivisie, and is playing quite well. So he's got an opportunity, perhaps, not only to work his way into this World Cup team, but then to secure a work permit to play in England next season with Stoke City, assuming they stay in the Premier League. And actually, it'll be easier for him to get a work permit if they get relegated, but I think they'll probably stay up. So Johansson's stock has been elevated in the last few, well, not just the last few months, but going back to the summer when he made the decision to play for the United States and obviously scored the very memorable goal against Panama in Panama City in that decisive qualifier, which put Mexico in the World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. He scored that memorable goal that gave the U.S. the victory in Panama. But, of course, Mexico is already going to go to the World Cup once Zuzi equalized because that was the end for Panama. Just Panama was more devastated, and Johansson gets his first goal as a member of the U.S. national team. My problem in this game, and I agree with you because I know you're posting on Facebook and on Twitter, you weren't rooting against Ukraine and you weren't rooting for the U.S. because of what was going on over in Ukraine, obviously, but you want to see a solid performance from the U.S., from the keeper to the back line, the midfield, scoring opportunities, the chances that were coming. And I know that, but when you see these terrible mental mistakes by a bunch of guys that probably seem to not communicate with each other or not look mentally sharp in a game against the Ukraine, who have fantastic, talented players. I mean, just so many opportunities they gave the Ukraine. And the Ukraine, thankfully, in that first half, didn't punish them, but they should have.
Yeah. Ukraine should have been 3 or 4 goals to the good, let's face it. I mean, we know the Ukraine has great – I have to condition myself not to say the Ukraine. It's not the Ukraine. For some reason, in Western verbiage for years, people have been calling it the Ukraine. It's Ukraine. But for whatever we're all well aware that Ukraine has two very, very good top-shelf wingers, two guys that are going to be playing at the highest level in European club football in the coming years. And that was always going to be difficult for Jeff Cameron and Edgar Castillo to contain those guys. And they did. They didn't do a very good job. And then you had the defensive breakdowns in the middle between Gooch and John Anthony Brooks. Again, as I said earlier, I know people are judging Gooch harshly based on this, and this might have been his last chance. We talked about how well he played at Sheffield Wednesday to get back into the U.S. national team picture. Maybe this is the end for him, but I think a lot of it was on Brooks' inexperience. Then again, when you're a veteran like Onyewu, you've been to two World Cups, and you have the pedigree Gooch has, you have to be able to take that young player and work with him to iron out his mistakes, even you're partnering for the first time. He wasn't able to do that. Ukraine opened up the U.S. very easily in the first half.
They really did, and you're absolutely right, because Oguchi Onyewu, we know he wants to get back on the national team, and we know he's trying to work hard to get back into that upper echelon status of being on the national team. And you're absolutely right, Kardik, because he showed communication with Brooks. He didn't, bring him like, hey, come here, you got to be at this position, you got to be at that position. You got to make sure that you do this right, you do that right. We saw none of that from Oguchi Onyewu. And the sad thing is that, like I said before, I don't want to say I think he's done, but, let's be honest about it. 23 roster spots, certain amount goes to defenders, certain amount midfielders. You know that they're going to probably bring between 3 to 4 strikers, or at least a midfielder that can play up top if you're going to bring him over. And unfortunately for Onyewu, it just looks like, I am not saying he wasn't interested in this game, he just did not look good in the communication department with Brooks. And I really think that Gucci got himself off the national team roster for Brazil.
The margin of error was very small for him. And I thought he would take this opportunity. Like I said, he got the move from QPR to QPR. He hadn't played a minute from QPR to Sheffield Wednesday in January in order to put himself in a position to get called in for this January for this March friendly, which we knew was going to be in Europe. We thought it was going to be in Ukraine. It turned out it was Cyprus, but that he was going to get called in as a European-based player if he played well enough at Sheffield Wednesday. He did that. He had an injury. He bounced back from that injury and got himself back into the team. Wednesday has been playing very well of late in the championship. So I thought, based on Gooch's character and his pedigree, he would take this chance. Being in the team, I was even thinking this at 2 o'clock Eastern today as the match started. Gooch is going to take this chance and he's going to reestablish himself. Well, you're right, Daniel, he did it. So could that be it? Yeah, it very well could be it. It's unfortunate, but maybe we have to move on now. And Omar Gonzalez, Matt Beisler, Clarence Goodson, I think they're all pretty much there. Now, who will be that fourth central defender if we take a fourth central defender, which we should, to Brazil? That's to be seen. Now, maybe given Jeff Cameron's difficulties today at right back, Cameron ends up sliding back to this kind of utility holding midfield slash center back cover player where he's covering for the starters at those positions. However, he has played well at right back at Stoke City this season. So it's something in with the U.S. where he's having problems. And again, he was facing a very strong team in wide areas today in Stoke City. He hasn't looked this this week in the past for Stoke. So maybe Cameron is that fourth center back, and that means that you're not going to see Vooch there. And I think Burks is out. Burks is one for the future. And Klinsmann has been patient in trying to develop him. But he made a number of mistakes, if you remember, even in the previous friendly he played in against Bosnia. I believe mm-hmm. He may have played against Scotland or Austria also. I can't remember him standing out in either of those matches. But he's not ready for prime time yet on the national team.
No, he's not ready. And I mean, look, there'll be another World Cup coming. Obviously, it's going to be in Russia. It's amazing now. Russia had the Winter Games this past winter, and then in 4 years, they're going to host the World Cup, and then we'll see what happens. But other than that, like you're correct. Well, I've said it myself. John Brooks is not ready for prime time. He's probably going to be more ready. We'll see if Jurgen Klinsmann uses him for the next cycle against Russia, or in Russia, I should say, and we'll see what happens. And as we keep going, Fabian Johnson in the midfield, on the right side of the wing part of the midfield. I mean, I understand what Klinsmann's trying to do with him, but I think he's more comfortable as a right back than being up on the midfield. And if he is going to be a right back, then you definitely have enough with him, not just to bring the ball up on the right side, but at least to give the midfielder, who's probably in front of him on the right side, to get more involved into the attack. And I think he can definitely bring up the ball perfectly. He can give those crosses on the right side, and he can track back nicely as a, you know, for defensive purposes. I think too much tinkering right now, where you're just so close to naming your roster, you're so close to getting to Brazil to fly down there, you know, have your three send-off games before you head down to Brazil. I just think right now, I think Fabian Johnson should remain on the back line as a right fullback.
Yeah, it also depends on whether obviously he's had a serious injury recently, and I don't know the prognosis, but it also depends on where Timothy Chandler is in the mind of Jurgen Klinsmann at this point. I think he was out of the picture. He began to have some really good performances for Nuremberg, and then got hurt. So maybe Fabi Johnson returns to the back line. We know that Klinsmann has played him at times in CONCACAF in this wide midfield position, and it's worked. But when you're talking about Ukraine, and we talked a lot about Ukraine and the political crisis there, but let's talk about Ukraine, the football side. They're maybe the best team not in the World Cup this summer. They were cruelly punished with the draw in the playoff to face France. Still almost got by them. Really, I think, were unlucky not to get out of the group stage and win their group. England won their group, but I don't know if folks remember some of the questionable calls in both games between England and Ukraine that seemed to all go England's way. So Ukraine, I think, is a World Cup-class side, and a good side, a European side. We're seeing Fabian Johnson's inability to break down a top European side with good wide defenders and good wide players, good wide midfielders, wingers. He was able to do a job against the likes of Panama and Jamaica and those sorts of sides, but Ukraine's a whole other level, and he didn't get the job done.
Yeah, that's very true. Ukraine is so strong. And just to let everyone know, of course, how big Ukraine is right now, in the European rankings in UEFA, they're ranked 12th. But on the world rankings, they're 18th. So, I mean, if you got Bosnia, you know, you're just behind them, and they're ranked 11th in Europe, and they're, of course, ranked 17th in the world. I mean, my God. I mean, the talent that Ukraine right now on their roster. And I will say this. I find it amazing that you don't hear a lot of Ukrainians playing either for a club in the Premier League or even anywhere in any club in England, for a German club, Italian club, Spanish club. I mean, there's not really a lot of Ukrainian players in Western Europe, and why is that? I mean, they have such great, talented players.
But they've had a lot in Western Europe in the past, but it's a good question. I think the Ukrainian League, we'll see what happens after all this crisis and the league placement suspended right now, but the Ukrainian League plays, the Ukrainian League pays very well, as does the Russian League. That's why you see fewer Russian and Ukrainian players in the top leagues in Western Europe through the years than you do players from the likes of Romania and Bulgaria and Croatia and places like that, Serbia, et cetera. A lot of Bosnian players, obviously, in Western European leagues also now. So I think that's the reason. And in fact, they've been able to attract some top foreign players to their league. I just think about Shakhtar Donetsk a year ago. They had, or a year and a half ago, they had Willian, Fernandinho, and Mkhitaryan all on that team. All three guys are having massive impacts in title races or near the top of the table in the Premier League and the Bundesliga this season. So it's a league that is able to move a lot of top foreign players on to the very top, not only to the top leagues in Europe, but the top teams in those leagues, Manchester City, Borussia Dortmund, Chelsea, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. And, well, we'll see what happens. Who knows? Maybe there'll be some clubs that paid attention to this friendly from Ukraine, that they will do well and maybe sign some of these players. But, you know, once again, just very bad defensive lapses on the back line. And once again, it's just one of those things where you just have to say that for the U.S., just really, really disheartening to see what happened there. Because Tim Howard, on both goals, made a great first save, just nowhere to protect Timmy and nowhere to try and stop the rebound attempts, and they get those two goals. I mean, the second one, just you see them ball watching, it just rolls right into the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just absolutely disheartening, and, you know, you just don't want to see that.
I mean, we're seeing this every time the U.S. plays a good opponent, right? Regardless of who the defenders are, we just see a lot of this ball watching, and you know, we've already hit John Anthony Brooks pretty hard in this show. Mm-hmm. I will give some credit on a play he made late in the first half when Ukraine could have gone up 2-0, should have gone up 2-0. Now, granted, I think there was some of the Ukrainian players were so stunned. Think about what they've been through the last few weeks with unrest at home, and then they weren't sure if they were going to play this friendly. They were stuck at the airport for a couple hours, not knowing whether they should go, leave the country, come to Cyprus. So maybe their minds weren't as engaged as they should have been in some cases, and I think they were stunned by the amount of space and time they had on the ball and actually made some mistakes in the final third because of how poor the U.S. defending was. There was one play where John Anthony Brooks actually rallied and was able to break up a goal scoring opportunity. But other than that, generally, once they got through the U.S. back line, they were through. And there was no defending of crosses coming from wide areas. And again, that is more on Cameron and on Edgar Castillo. Now, look, Edgar Castillo is a guy I know Klinsmann likes. He likes his speed, he likes his pace, he likes his ability to change a match late on if you need another wide option. But as a left back, in matches where we have good opposition, and I'm not talking about playing the likes of Antigua and Panama and those types of sides. I'm talking about playing sides like Ukraine and Bosnia and teams of that level. Every time he has played left back, he has been skewered. That is a fact.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to be on the plane to Brazil. I don't know that he should be.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a caller, actually, to get his opinion across. 908-502, go ahead, give us your name, and talk about the game.
Hey, Danny, this is Keith Brown. How are you?
Keith, how are you, my friend? Keith, go ahead and talk about how you saw it.
Well, I just thought it was a dreadful performance today by everybody, actually. I was interested to know who you thought the man of the match was for the U.S.
To be honest with you, I would have to go with Howard. I have to go with Tim Howard because I thought Timmy did excellent in this game. Obviously, the slip, the long-distance shot that, let's be honest, if Timmy doesn't slip, it's not that much of Harry Carey, if you know what I mean. I mean, he probably would have grabbed it, but, he made great saves on those first attempts. But when the ball was put in the back of the net, not his fault at all.
No, I agree with you. I think Timmy was probably the man of the match. But what concerns me for the U.S. going into the World Cup, though, Dan, is the attackers, right? I know Landon wasn't there. But Juan Agudelo, Jozy Altidore, Fabian Johnson, Sacha Clisson, they had nothing today. Nothing at all. I know Jozy had that header, I think it was just at the beginning of the second half, but which probably if he had scored, it may have been a different game. But they had nothing. That really worries me because I think our defense will be okay. But I'm really concerned about our attacking play,
No, absolutely, Keith, and that's the one thing that is going to be the big problem right now because what's Josie's demeanor right now? And, Carter, if you want to answer this too, go ahead. What's Josie's demeanor? We know DeCanio, when he was the manager at Sunderland, brought him over for having such a great year with AZ Alkmaar, and now it's like, to me, it doesn't look like he can't even handle the Premier League at all, and maybe he should have stayed in the Netherlands.
Yeah, Sunderland have found better options with Fabio Verini, who's on loan from Liverpool, and Stephen Fletcher, a striker that I like a lot, liked at Wolves, liked Burnley. I was very surprised when Sunderland signed him when they had Fletcher. But I'm more concerned, Keith and Daniel, about Clint Dempsey. I don't even know if he was there today. And we saw this on his loan spell at Fulham. We saw this at the end of his season at Seattle. It seems to be a recurring pattern now. Of him disappearing in matches and being disinterested, and body language is bad. And we saw him miss a great chance to put Fulham out in front in the derby the other day against Chelsea. And then he just faded out of that game and ended his Fulham loan spell with a whimper. I'm concerned about him, guys.
Yeah, he didn't play well today. And I think we've learned that Brooks is not going to make the team for Brazil. Gooch, I don't think he's going to make the team either. I think Cameron will make the team. Bedoya will probably make the team. It was such a poor performance all around. And maybe it was the atmosphere. Maybe it was, it was just because it was a friendly or whatever. But a lot of the guys, they had a lot to prove. And I don't think anybody, apart from Timmy, proved anything.
I agree with you there, Keith. I don't think they've approved as well. Keith, real quickly, of course, Carter, if Keith Brown's a former London police officer in England, and I was wondering what's going on with Moscow and Russia, with Putin and Ukraine. You've seen a lot when there was a lot of communism in Western and in Eastern Europe. What's your feeling about that situation right now? Are you a little nervous of what could happen?
Well, I think everybody's nervous, right? Because I think Putin is. He's a madman. It's scary. I think he has delusions of grandeur. He wants to build Russia up to where it was, 25, 30 years ago. I think he's going about it completely the wrong way. I think a lot of innocent people are going to get hurt, which is really sad. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I will tell you, I've been to Spartak Moscow for a soccer game about 25, 30 years ago, and nothing more scary in the world than to see the Russian riot squad coming at you with water cannons and dogs. So it's pretty crazy. But it's a sad state of affairs, and we just have to hope that diplomacy, goes through and this crazy guy doesn't start killing innocent people.
Absolutely. Keith, listen, have a good evening tonight. I'll definitely see you at the home opener.
Danny, I wouldn't be me if I didn't say let's go Red Bulls, all right?
That's right, boy.
I'll see you soon, buddy.
I'll see you soon at the home opener. Take care. That's a good
friend of mine,
Keith Brown.
Right.
Bye-bye. That's Keith Brown, a loyal Red Bull supporter, of course, originally from England. He lives in New Jersey. He lives where I used to live in Fairlawn. So he's a real good guy there, Keith. And I never knew this until he posted on Facebook. He's a former Bobby in London. So, yeah, he's a good guy and everything. And we'll get to more, of course, with the whole Ukraine-Russia problem. But back to the match, you know, once again, Tim Howard, do you think this is his last World Cup for the national team? Do you think this is it for him after Brazil? Do you think he's going to retire from the national team because –
He might retire from the national team. Obviously, Brad Guzan's a great understudy for him, I think, at this point, and has played well for Villa, although he hasn't been as strong this season for Villa as he was last season. Yeah, this could be his last World Cup. I agree with you and Keith. He was probably the man of the match today. The only player I thought in the attacking end of the side that was okay was Bedoya. But he certainly beat you a man of the match performance, so it would have to be Howard by default. Yeah, this could be it for Timmy, and he'd be retiring a little later than Brad Friedel did, but he would have two World Cups as a starter under his belt, including one where he helped lead the U.S. to winning the group. So that would be in 2010. I think it would be a time where he could step away. He could also stay for another year or two after the World Cup, as Casey Keller did. Casey Keller stayed with the national team through the Copa America in 2007, if you remember.
Yes.
After the 2006 World Cup. Howard was named the starter by Bob Bradley right away, and I think everybody knew that. That might happen with Guzan, and Howard could stay. Although Howard is still playing at a higher level than Guzan right now in England. Now, last season, I thought Guzan was the better of the two. With Villa versus Howard at Everton. This season, with the different style of play under Roberto Martinez, I mean, I don't know if this is specifically the reason why Howard has looked so much better, but he has made very few mistakes this season. I know ESPN highlighted that JT goal late in the I think it was a JT goal. Maybe it was recorded as a Howard own goal. But the goal against Chelsea after the Ramirez dive, I mean, they didn't mention that there never should have been a free kick there. But
yeah.
I don't think that was a – I mean, that was an isolated incident. Howard used to make a lot of those mistakes, and I would get on him a few seasons ago saying he's making mistakes constantly for Everton. And I know David Moyes was thinking about bringing in another keeper to challenge him. Has he stayed at Everton this summer. Martinez ultimately did that, bringing Joel Robles in, and it's been okay. It's worked out fine for Howard, and he's playing very well. So we'll see. That's one bright spot. I mean, I guess we have to talk about the bright spot, which is him, because the rest of the team was abject today.
Well, I'll say this, though. I think the substitutions provided a spark. I thought bringing in Breck Shea, who is now with Barnsley right now, I believe on loan from Stoke, but I thought he did okay. Not great, but I thought he did okay. Aron Johansson, definitely on another level. He had that great opportunity in the match for at least to pull one back with that hell of a shot. I thought Johansson looked great. I thought, as I was saying before, I thought Breck Shea looked great coming off the bench. Other than that, that's basically it. Tim Howard had a great game. And you're right. What is going on with Clint Dempsey all of a sudden? Because, you know, I got on him when he was on the national team several years ago that he looked uninspired playing for the USA. Has he gone back to this now?
Yeah.
Has he gone back to this now? Because
time, Daniel. Yeah, and Daniel, I argued with you at the time and thought that you were wrong, but now that we're seeing this again, I think you were right 3 years ago. I remember when you and I were on shows together and you were making that point and I would defend him. But he looked disinterested in national team. He looks disinterested in Fulham. I'm not sure about at Seattle. He didn't look particularly interested there, but I don't think he looked as – I mean, his body language, both at Fulham and at the national team, in the last few times I've seen him, has been horrible. It's not just that he's not playing well. It's that his body language says that he doesn't want to be there. I saw that again today.
Then what's the point of being on the national team if your body language is saying, I don't want to be there? I mean, this is the problem, Kardik. Look, I don't want to harass Clint Dempsey, all the way back, after Germany 2006 and stuff. But, I mean, for goodness sakes, I mean, you got a guy who's got plenty of talent. You got a guy that is basically considered maybe the next captain for the national team, once Landon Donovan probably gets the armband back. And now it looks like he doesn't want to be with the national team again. I mean, this is just something. And I don't know if I can put my finger on it, but I just wish stop pretending that he doesn't want to, that he wants to be there.
Yeah, Danny, I don't know what more to add to what you said. I'm questioning why he's the captain at this point.
Yeah, I'm questioning too. I mean, does he want to be captain? I mean, yeah, look, you got tackled down. You shoved the guy you shoved the guy away, and then you almost start a fight. That's not being a captain. That's not being a captain. Being a captain is, okay, you got tackled down, untangle yourself from your opponent, help him up, and say, you okay? Yes, good. All right, let's keep going. That's it. I understand he was frustrated because nothing worked right today. Nothing worked right today at all for the U.S., unfortunately. And when they had a better start of the second half, fine. It looked like something was going to happen. But you know what? If you're going to wear the captain's armband, Kardik, you got to find a way to remain a gentleman on the field.
Yeah, how did he not get sent off for that? I mean, I think Taylor Twellman and Ian Dark were thinking the same thing, calling the match. I mean, I thought Twellman was really offended by it, actually, as the captain, seeing the captain, watching the captain of our national team behave in such a amateurish and juvenile fashion.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, in a friendly. Juan Agudelo got subbed in, not really much. Obviously, the feed went kaput toward the end of the game, around the 86th, 87th minute. But, not really much to say about Juan Agudelo. I know he's in the Eredivisie. It sounds like he's finally getting his career on track. What is it about some of these players that play in the U.S. in Major League Soccer that they finally get an opportunity to play first team minutes for an MLS team, and then all of a sudden, when they get to the U.S. national team level, it just seems like things fall apart on them and they're just not finding ways to, get the call. If they do get the call, they're going to come off the bench.
Yeah, I was actually Danny Williams, another one today. He's been playing very well with Reading. I wanted to see more of him in this game and we did it. Yeah, and I was disappointed by that. But I think what we will see going forward is maybe more competition for spots, and that's why a lot of these guys get called in, like Agudelo, and they feel like they have to constantly be in a position where they're playing and they're playing at a high level in order to impress this manager. Now, this is very different than what used to happen under Bob Bradley and at times under Bruce Arena, where I think there was a clear pecking order. Now, it's not to say that a lot of it wasn't based on merit. It wasn't meritorious who was selected, but there was a clear pecking order as to who were considered for spots on rosters for major tournaments. And you could get away with not playing at a high level at your club team or even not playing at all for long spells of time and still make a U.S. roster. I don't think that's possible under Jurgen Klinsmann, which is why Agudelo had to get himself in a position where he was playing. I think he and Danny Williams also, who had fallen out of favor at Hoffenheim, moved to Reading over the summer after Reading was relegated from the Premier League, and both have worked their way into good situations. Neither did their case any damage today. I think maybe that's where we have to go with this conversation, is who actually damaged themselves in the process.
Right.
For being on that plane to Brazil.
Well, definitely it's Onyewu. I know he's damaged himself really badly. I don't think Dempsey has damaged himself. I think he will be going regardless of what happened today. But still, though, it just really boggles the mind that he looks like he didn't want to be there. Why was he there? Well, then why'd you go to Fulham on loan when you knew you weren't getting any playing time? You know, what was the purpose?
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe he will argue that Rene Meulensteen's sacking is what cost him at Fulham, because I guess he played in the first few games. After getting there, Meulensteen was still the manager. And then when Meulensteen dropped him completely for those two games against Manchester United and Liverpool before he was sacked, because he moved Dempsey right into the team after Dempsey came over, and Dempsey didn't do anything and quite frankly looked disinterested. I mean, he said all kinds of nice things about being back home, all of this stuff, because obviously his career as a player was made by two entities, Fulham Football Club and the U.S. national team. It wasn't made by the New England Revolution. It wasn't made by Seattle. It wasn't made by Tottenham, anywhere else he's played. So he was back home, at least for a couple months, his home, and as far as football is concerned, obviously he's a Texan, but and he was the captain of the U.S. national team. Should have been a great time for him. Instead, he performed very poorly in the three or four matches at Fulham before Meulensteen decided to go with a younger lineup. Then Meulensteen was sacked, and McGaff did not play him the first few matches. Then started him in his final match against Chelsea, knowing that, you know, Dempsey's a Fulham guy. He knows the importance of the derby against Chelsea. And Dempsey, yep, to his credit, made a great run in the first three or four minutes on the match, had a sitter, and couldn't finish it. And,
wow.
You know, just drifted out of the game. But I noticed in the games he was playing at Fulham, he didn't look particularly interested. He was his body language was bad. And then it got worse today. Today he was drifting in and out of consciousness. I mean, I think he didn't want to be there. And look, he has a higher responsibility now. And I'm not quite sure what happens going forward with him. Clinton has a decision to make. I mean, you don't necessarily strip an active player of the captaincy. You don't want to strip a star player of the captaincy, right? That's something you don't want to do as manager. But at the same time, you need a guy who's going to be the captain, who's going to lead by example. He is not leading,
yep,
by example. I don't know what goes on in the dressing room. I'll admit that freely, Daniel. But I do not think, based on what we know about Clint Dempsey, that he could be some great inspirational leader in the dressing room. I think he was named the captain because he is seen as the best player on the team. But maybe now you have to go with, I mean, the safe pick for captain for me was always going to be Tim Howard, right? I mean, he's the one guy you know that's going to be on the pitch. You know he's the one guy who can communicate with players. You know he's the one guy that is going to lead by example. You know he's the one guy that's consistently going to be playing at a high level. I know you don't necessarily want your goalkeeper as the captain, but he doesn't I mean, Clinton doesn't have a Schweinsteiger or Philipp Lahm type player like he did with Germany, although those guys were very young when Clinton managed Germany, but he had them both with Bayern also. I mean, he doesn't have those kinds of natural leaders in this team, so he has a decision to make about the captaincy. There isn't an experienced center back. I mean, a center back is always a good guy to name as a captain. That's why you see guys like John Terry captain their team. Bocanegra obviously captain the U.S. for a long time. You don't have an experienced standout player like Claudio Reyna, who's not going to act out, so who was the captain under Arena for 7 years. I don't know. I mean, I would consider just giving the captaincy to Howard and being done with it, and somehow – don't humiliate Dempsey in the process so he checks out on you, but make it very clear that he hasn't met the standard of being a captain. You can even use it as an excuse that he's designated captain of the national team, and then he doesn't consult with the manager about his move to Seattle from Tottenham.
No,
whereas
you're absolutely
Michael
right.
Bradley, on the other hand, now, Klinsmann didn't like I just want to point this out real quick, Daniel. Sorry. Klinsmann didn't like Dempsey's move back to MLS. He didn't like Bradley's move back to MLS. But he has said to people that I've spoken to that he respects Bradley far more than the way he made the move, because Bradley called Klinsmann as the manager. And of course, Bradley's the son of a coach, so he knows how you treat your manager, and said, hey, Coach Klinsmann, I'm going to make this move. It's in my best interest. I have to make this move. And then so Klinsmann knew a couple days beforehand.
Yeah.
In Dempsey's case, Klinsmann found out about it the same way we did. You know, from reading tweets and seeing, like, Brian Strauss break stories or whoever broke that story. I mean, that's unforgivable.
It is. No, you're absolutely right. It's unforgivable. Bradley was a mensch enough to Jurgen Klinsmann, listen, I'm going back to MLS. I'm going to play in Toronto. And that's been my crux of my argument, Cardick. It's like, what is more Network where all of a sudden our top American players who are on our national team, you know, Bradley was on Roma, Clint was in Tottenham. I know he wasn't getting much of a chance anyway. But why is it our attacking American players are not getting the same amount of chances and the same amount of time as you might say maybe another player country, but they're still from within the continent of Europe?
Right, or even some of our defensive players. I mean, Jeff Cameron, I think, has played, unless he's been suspended, has basically played every minute this season for Stoke.
Right.
The Premier League. Right, right. I mean, and it's a club that maybe Michael Bradley wouldn't play for. I mean, honestly, I mean, it's just it's one of those things where U.S. American goalkeepers and American defenders are better respected in Europe than
attacking-minded players. Yeah,
Gooch is a perfect example. The fact is, Aguchi Onyewu, if he were an attacking player, would have been back in MLS many years ago. But because he's a defensive player and he's had some good moments in Europe, he keeps getting chances at different clubs. I mean, I was shocked when Sporting Lisbon signed him after he flopped at Milan. I was shocked when Malaga, a Champions League team at the time, under Pellegrini, signed him after he flopped at Sporting Lisbon. Yet, if you're an American attacking player, it seems if you flop one place, you have to come home. You can be a defender in like Gooch, and just, you know, keep going through teams, cycling through teams, which, I mean, it's unfortunate for our attacking players. They don't get the opportunities. I'm hoping Agudelo might change some of this, because Agudelo is the first American player in a while that a Premier League team has had so much faith in that they went to the mat twice for him and went to work permit hearings twice to get him a work permit. I guess the last guy that happened was Eddie Johnson with Fulham, and they had to loan him out, and it didn't work out. But it's been a few years since we've had guys that have been really attacking players that have been sought after in Europe. But again, I mean, this is a different thing. But Bradley handled the situation well, whereas Klinsmann, whereas Dempsey didn't. So it's very disappointing.
No, it really is, and it's really it's just really shocking that there's been so much disappointment right now with the way that Clint Dempsey is out there, and I think his attitude is probably poor. I mean, he's probably more on an ego trip than it is being, you know, a humble guy out there. I mean, I don't want to be negative on Clint because he's got plenty of potential. And when he's turned on, he brings down the opponents to their knees because he knows he can go out there and he can definitely punish an opponent all by himself. That's for sure.
I agree on that. I think we're in a very tough position with him, though, because he's not in that moment mentally.
No, he's not. And as we're going to finish up here soon on the special edition here of the American Soccer Show, the USA at Ukraine postgame show, as many of you know, this match was supposed to be played in the Ukraine somewhere, I believe, outside of Kiev. It was moved to Cyprus because of what was going on with Vladimir Putin and with how Russia has invaded the Ukraine. Carter Krishnar is not only a great soccer analyst for the American game over in, as well as the Premier League. He also is a very good political blogger, political columnist. He has his own local blog called The Florida Squeeze because he lives in Florida. So he's attuned to what goes on in the state of Florida as well as what goes on nationally within our country and internationally. And Kardik, I want to bring this part in. Usually I don't mix politics with sports, but the way that this whole thing happened in the Ukraine, the way that Putin apparently was planning this while the Sochi Winter Olympics was going on, was ready to pounce and went and invaded that town in Ukraine, Crimea, I believe it's called. Why is Putin doing this? Why is Vladimir Putin trying to take over Ukraine? And he gives a statement that pretty much smells like something fishy is going on around here.
He's deluded, as John Terry has, I think, clearly pointed out. I think also he's in this very odd position where he has tried to manipulate the internal politics of the Ukraine for years, and now you see Ukrainian nationalism coming to the forefront as an expression of Ukrainian pride, but also as it can be interpreted to a certain extent as being anti-Russian. There are a lot of ethnic Russian people in Crimea and in the eastern areas of Ukraine, and I think Putin, is, in his mind, feels that those areas still need to be under Russian influence economically and politically. So he is going to violate international agreements or ignore international agreements and assume that the West is not going to have anything in store for him. Now, Secretary Kerry and British Prime Minister Cameron, have made it clear that economic sanctions are on the table. Now, Angela Merkel doesn't want to be part of this. Germany has a different view of this than the United States, France, and the United Kingdom. Their economy is more dependent on Russia, more intertwined with Russia than France is, or the U.S. or the U.K. But now he's shot back at the Western idea of potentially taking some significant economic steps against Russia, saying that he will freeze all U.S. assets and U.K. assets in Russia. So it's a matter of who blinks first. I certainly hope, from my perspective, I'm very opinionated on this. I'm very pro-Ukrainian. Their country has been dismembered by Putin. Now, I'll admit that maybe the situation is too far gone for the Crimea to return to Ukraine, but we have to make sure that there's ironclad international agreements that prevent Putin from going any further than he's gone. And I think we all sympathize with the people of Ukraine. There was a lot of there's a lot of outpouring of support here in the United States for Ukraine, and we saw that even today's match. I wasn't the only one saying what I said, which was, you know, it's with a heavy heart. I always root for the U.S. national team. This is one time where I didn't mind us losing. I would have liked to have seen a better performance, mind you. I mean, we got run off the pitch, but I don't mind Ukraine winning this game, quite honestly, given what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. But let me ask you this, though. Is it more about the financial situation with Ukraine, meaning, of course, gas prices, allowing who's going to control all the gas refineries, the oil refineries within the Ukraine, that maybe Russia is also making that political statement as well?
Yeah, that's absolutely part of it. And grain, wheat supplies from Ukraine, although that tends to be in the western part of the country, which is still very pro-Western, pro-American, pro-British, pro-French, whatever. There is, I think, a pretense to try and control that. And, and the thing that I've noticed is political ideologies kind of go out the window. We're talking about West versus Russia. You have a conservative prime minister in the U.K. You have a democratic president in the U.S. They're all very much on the same page. The new leadership in Kiev, the new Ukrainian leadership, tends to be pretty far to the right, actually. It's kind of a right-wing government that's come in, but they're standing very closely with Kerry and Obama and the Democrats, the liberals in this country. It's about the principle of freedom, really, when it comes down to it. I think we all know that Putin is a little bit deluded. Now, the question is, if you keep appeasing a guy like Putin, do you have another Hitler-like situation? Hillary Clinton and John McCain have both raised that in the last 24 hours. I'm not sure I want to go there yet, but Crimea feels an awful lot like the Sudet land in 1938 probably felt, and we know what happened after that. So that's something we all have to think about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, we'll see what just got to say, Karik, it's really been really interesting to see how these things have been going on. Just really interesting to see, you know, world power, or at least trying to become a world power again, is what Putin is trying to do for Russia. And, you know, I understand he's got to be, he's got to protect whatever he's got to protect for his own country. But still, though, just to see these soldiers invading a country.
I should say that, Daniel, that I don't – and I've tried to make it clear to people that think I'm being too hardline on this. I do understand Russia has its own security interests. I do understand Russia has the need to protect Russian speakers and Russian ethnic people in neighboring countries. However, there's a way to do that through international organizations like the United Nations and others without invading and dismembering your neighbors.
Absolutely. I mean, I understand all these former Russian terror, these former areas that were a part of the Soviet Union, and he's probably thinking about reacquiring them through illegal means. Look, if he wants that town, I think what Putin should really do is he should try to find a way to talk to the Ukrainian government and say, listen, this town is part of Russia again.
Yeah.
That's what he should have done.
Right, and he should have given them and said, we need to have a plebiscite, a referendum, and allow the people of Crimea to vote, whether they want to be part of Russia or part of Ukraine. But instead now, there's going to be a referendum with Russian troops on the ground there. So how legitimate is that referendum?
Right.
But let's be honest.
Absolutely.
About it. I mean, and you have Ukraine was is a country that there were tens of thousands of Jews deported from Ukraine that were killed in the Holocaust. It's a country where there were tens of thousands of Muslims deported, many of them killed, others resettled in parts of Russia. Some of those Muslims have now come back to Ukraine because their descendants. Maybe even some who were moved in the 40s, forcibly, 30s and 40s, who have now said, look, they're petrified because they came back to live in Ukraine, not in Russia. And, you know, they've been persecuted by the Russians. So you have that element. You have the few Ukrainian Jews now very concerned about being under Russian auspices again. So there are all these other elements that come into play. But then there are ethnic Russians who feel that after this coup and this right wing government coming to power in Kiev, that they have to turn to Mother Russia for help. But it could have been done diplomatically. Instead, Putin, by moving troops in, has forced the hand of the new Ukrainian government as well as the United States and the West.
Yeah, definitely. And it's just been really a bunch of crazy stuff going on politically in world politics. You really do hope that there's going to be some form of an agreement or a resolve, and that Ukraine can just be left alone and they can try and rebuild their government politically, financially. It's just been really strange, to be honest with you. I mean, I haven't seen anything like this maybe since the days when the Cold War was still going on under communism over in Eastern Europe, and you just hope that nothing will go wrong here, and you hope that everything will finally come together and that Putin can finally agree with the new government, because the way he did it, it's just, I felt, is underhandedness, very shady, and he should have just tried to do this, you know, with negotiations if possible, if he wanted to ask them to take a portion of Ukraine to bring it back to become part of Russia.
And I think the world would have, they may have been concerned about that, but it certainly, we wouldn't be at the crisis point, the breaking point we're at now. I mean, this is just a completely different situation because of his action, and only because of his action. He can say he was asked by the deposed premier to move in, but of course the premier, I should point out, when I say it was a coup in Ukraine, let me walk that back a little bit. It was a coup in the sense that there were people in the streets urging action, but the parliament took a very legal action under the Ukrainian constitution to remove the head of state and make the Speaker of the House the acting head of state. So in reality, it was a legal – it was pushed by what happened in the streets, but it was done legally. It wasn't the military storming the presidential palace and removing the president. That's not what happened.
Yeah, definitely. And that's one of those things where, you know, I just – like I said before, you know, I just hope everything gets back to normal and there's no more problems here and everyone can go – among, you know, about their lives. Well, Kartik, the United States, they lose to a final of 2-0 to the Ukraine. And just got to say, Kartik, let's hope the next friendly against Mexico in Glendale, Arizona, will be a lot better.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting game. Obviously, there'll be an entirely MLS and Mexican League-based squad for that game, unlike this one, which was largely almost entirely European-based players. So different set of players. Hopefully they perform better. than this. This was a very poor performance. Good opponent, but poor performance.
All right, great. Everyone, thanks for listening to today. Hopefully better against the next friendly against Mexico. For Carter Kirschneier, I'm Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening, and talk to you next time. I'll talk to you on Monday for the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. Take care now. Bye-bye.